The first of these was regarded as, or is regarded as, a manifestation of Avalokiteshvara, the great Bodhisattva of compassion, whereas the second was regarded as the manifestation of Amitabha, the Buddha of infinite light. In this context, one might say that the broad difference, the broad distinction between Buddha and Bodhisattva is the distinction, as it were, between the static and the dynamic aspects of the same spiritual reality. Buddha represents the static aspect, the aspect out of time, the eternal aspect. And the Bodhisattva represents that same out-of-time enlightenment or transcendental experience in process of realization within time, within the historical process. So one is, as it were, static. Not static in the sense of standing still in time, but of standing, as it were, outside time altogether. And the other is the dynamic, the Buddha and the Bodhisattva. Some Western writers have rather confused the functions of the Dalai Lama and the Panchen Lama. Some Western writers have said that the Dalai Lama is the temporal ruler of Tibet, whereas the Panchen Lama is the spiritual ruler, or the spiritual head, and they seem to have arrived at this conclusion on account of the fact that technically a Buddha is superior to a Bodhisattva. So the Dalai Lama is only the incarnation or manifestation of a Bodhisattva, whereas the Panchen Lama is the incarnation or manifestation of a Buddha. So they assume the Panchen Lama must occupy a higher position than the Dalai Lama. But this isn't so. It doesn't work out like that. It sounds quite logical, but in the context of Tibetan Buddhism, it just isn't true. In the eyes of the Tibetans, in the eyes of Tibetan Buddhists, the Dalai Lama is in fact all in all. He's the temporal ruler and the spiritual head, both together. And the Panchen Lama is, in comparison, a rather shadowy figure. I remember that when I used to visit the houses of Tibetan friends in Kalimpong, you'd always see a large framed photograph of the Dalai Lama in the altar, or in the shrine, rather. You'd always see this. You never went to a house without seeing it. But you very, very rarely saw a similar framed photograph of the Panchen Lama. And I remember also that when both the Lamas, both the Dalai Lama and the Panchen Lama, were received at the Siliguri airport, not far from Kalimpong, in, I think, 1956, I think it was, winter of 1956, owing to the machinations of the Chinese, who were semi-sponsoring the Panchen Lama was provided with a throne of the same height as the Dalai Lama. And this was intensely resented by the Tibetans, who regarded the Panchen Lama as a comparatively unimportant figure and regarded the Dalai Lama as very much the superior of the two. But this is just in passing to illustrate this fact, this point, that for the Tibetans, for the Tibetan Buddhists, traditionally, the Dalai Lama is all in all. Not only the temporal ruler, but the spiritual head and the human, the living manifestation of the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara. Now, among the line of the Dalai Lamas, amongst the 14 Dalai Lamas, the third and the fifth and the 13th are of special historical importance. The third Dalai Lama lived in the 16th century, roughly contemporary with our Queen Elizabeth I, and he finally converted the Mongols. You may remember from the last lecture that the Mongols were originally converted by Kpagpa, the Sakya Pa hierarch, but they subsequently fell away from Buddhism after the collapse of their empire in China. And the third Dalai Lama was responsible for bringing them back into the fold of Buddhism. And thereafter they became very staunch followers of Tibetan Buddhism, and especially staunch followers of the Gelugpa school. Incidentally, the Mongolian Buddhists, the Mongolian monks in particular, have produced a great many saints and scholars. And Mongolian lamas, I found, from my own personal contacts and experiences, Mongolian lamas are especially famous for their learning. The Tibetan Gelugpa lamas are sometimes learned enough in fact, usually learned enough. But the Mongolians, for some reason or other, surpassed even the Tibetans in learning. And I remember that a little story which was told me once by Dandur Rinpoche. He said that when the 13th Dalai Lama fled to Mongolia, when Sir Francis Young Husband's expedition reached Lhasa early in the present century, the 13th Dalai Lama, had a number of discussions with Mongolian lamas. But he found, rather to his consternation, that they referred to texts with which he just wasn't acquainted, which he'd never studied. So this gave him much food for thought, Dandur Rinpoche said. And when he did eventually return to Lhasa, he revised and he reorganized the curriculum of studies after his contact with these Mongolian lamas, who really are formidable. I remember again one whom I happened to know personally, and we traveled about a bit together, and whenever we sat down, out would come a book, out would come a great volume, and he'd sit down cross-legged and he'd put a silk cloth across his knees and he'd open the book and he'd start studying, he'd start reading. He'd never do anything else. Day and night almost, the whole of the time that I was with him, he was studying in this way. He was absolutely indefatigable. And this is, I gather, very typical of the Mongolian monastic scholars. But this is, by the way, back to the third Dalai Lama. The third Dalai Lama received from one of the rulers of the Mongols in those days, a ruler known as Ultan Khan, the title of Dalai Lama. The word Dalai, in fact, is not Tibetan at all. It's Mongolian. Dalai means great like the ocean. So Dalai Lama means the Lama, the teacher, the guru, who is great or wide like the ocean. And this is the title, of course, which is usually used by Westerners. But Tibetans, again, do not usually use this title when they refer to the Dalai Lama. They use it when they're talking to Europeans, but amongst themselves they usually say either Gyewa Rinpoche, which means the precious ruler, or, even more often I think, Yeshe Norbu, which means the jewel of knowledge. These are the two very respectful titles which they use when referring to the Dalai Lama. Now, the fifth Dalai Lama lived in the 17th century, and he is known as the Great Fifth. He was a very learned man, a great scholar, a great author, and apart from purely religious subjects, on which he wrote a great deal, he also wrote on history, on grammar, on poetry, and on astrology. So you can see that he was a rather cultivated sort of person. And though the leading representative of the Gelugpa school, he was in fact very sympathetic to the Nyingmapa school. And he did in fact write several books on the traditions of the Nyingmapa school. Which is rather like, say, in the West, a pope writing on Methodism or something of that sort. And he wrote very sympathetically. And he was not only a great scholar and a great writer, but he was a great statesman and a great administrator. And with the help of the Mongols, with their support, he took over the rule of Tibet. So that it is from the days of the fifth Dalai Lama, the great fifth, that Tibet became what we in the West call a theocracy, a sort of religious state. And it is important to remember that Tibet has been a theocracy for only 300 years out of the 1,300 during which Buddhism has been known in Tibet. We tend to think of the Dalai Lamas and the theocracy of Tibet as something fixed and established for all time. But it isn't really so. Buddhism has been established in Tibet, has in fact flourished there until the very recent past, for 1,300 years. So out of that period, only 300 years, only about a quarter of the period, saw the rule of the Dalai Lamas and the establishment of this theocratic state. In other words, this, which we usually think of as typically Tibetan Buddhist, is a comparatively recent development. It's this great fifth Dalai Lama who started building the Potala, that famous seat of the Dalai Lamas in Lhasa. And the Potala is named after Avalokiteshvara's traditional abode or residence in South India, according to the Buddhist scriptures. The 13th Dalai Lama ruled in the present century, and it was he who reasserted the independence of Tibet against the Chinese. The present Dalai Lama was discovered and identified in 1935, which means that he is now 33 years of age. I don't want this evening to go into any questions of politics, because I think in any case the story, the very tragic story of Tibet in recent years, is quite well known to you all. But I do want to explain briefly what the Dalai Lama means to the Tibetan people. And then I propose to close on a more personal note.